You're listening to Freed on Business. To talk to Jim and his guests, call 305-541-2350. That's 305-541-2350. Now, back to your host, Jim Freed.
All right, we're back, and as promised, we have my good friend, the Culver House College of Commerce, Alabama Center for Real Estate Study, Director of Research and Corporate Engagement, Casey Conway. He came to town to talk to my friends at NAI, and he's spending some time with us, too. Hey, Casey, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Always an honor to be here with you, and always nice to be in sunny Florida.
It's my absolute pleasure. Now, Casey, I know at some point we're going to talk about trains because you love to do that, but talk to people about just your background for just a minute so we know where you're coming from.
So, a freak of nature. I'm a third-generation MAI, so I was scarred for life. Was I going to have to deal with evaluation? But I didn't quite learn from my grandfather and father, which was, you know, just use it as a foundation and get the bleep out of it. So I finally, after 30 years, have gotten kind of the bleep away from it. But I've been on the real estate, finance, and analytics and economic side last 30 years, and I'm having a ball with the University of Alabama now, and I went to Emory University in Atlanta for my college career, and so I didn't know much about SEC football, so I'm learning a lot about SEC football.
Well, we're going to let you slide because it's a gator town over here, but, you know, Alabama, they've won their way to the top, so we're going to cut you some slack. Now, Casey, let's jump right into it. What are you seeing on the horizon for the end of 2017 and in 2018, generally macroeconomic, and then we can drill down into real estate after that?
Sure. So I'm, you know, it's funny. The minute I get out of banking, I'm a whole lot more optimistic about the economy. And I tell you something about bankers, right?
Of course.
So I'm generally very optimistic. You know, we started the year off with the first quarter exceeding 1% GDP. And, you know, most people in the media headlines, you know, said, oh, gosh, we're only 1% GDP. But they forget first quarter is when GDP is the worst, right? Because we're hungover from spending. The days are short. You know, things you don't know about here in Florida, you know, weather's not great. And so the first quarter, 1.2%, was one of the best first quarters GDP we've had in a decade. And then we just put together two back-to-back quarters over 3% GDP. And I think we'll round out the year well over 2%, 2.25%, maybe 2.5%. That'll be the first time we've exceeded 2% GDP in a year. So I'm very optimistic.
And how does that relate to other well-developed countries?
So, you know, we're such a big economy, you can't look at it percentage-wise. On dollar amount, we're number one in the world, and I think even in the outer planetary system as well, almost $19 trillion in GDP. But in percent growth, it's decent. Europe is coming back very strong, Germany. So there are other parts of the country that on a percentage basis, but on dollar amount, we're number one.
So how does the rest of, we'll talk about the world economy for just one more second. So how's the rest of the world doing? It seems to me like everybody's on the uptick for the first time since the Great Recession.
Yeah, well, you know, in America, whenever we export something good, the rest of the world does pretty good. So we finally figured out how to export this crazy monetary policy of free money. So we exported it to the rest of the world, and free money and monetary easing is real good. And now we're pivoting to QT. Everybody thinks it's a quantitative tightening. No, it's quantitative. Go buy a quick trip and get a big gulp.
Well, you know, now let's talk a little bit about what we're going to do on the Florida economy. Talk to me a little bit about now where Florida fits into all this.
So Florida, very strong. You know, I've recently been in Texas as well, and since the hurricanes. And what I tell most folks when they think about, well, things are done and destroyed, and, you know, the Houston economy is done and South Florida economy is done, I say, wait a minute, folks. Have any of you been down there? They're up in for business. You know, I've been down to Corpus Christi. The hotels are open. The plants and trees have leaves on them. You can rent a car. You can go in and out of the airport. Places like Texas and Florida, you know, your top five economies in the country, can take a punch and get back up real quickly.
You know, I didn't realize it, but my family from Atlanta was thinking about coming down for the holiday season this year, and they asked me, Jim, do you think we'll be able to get a hotel, or are the emergency workers still using all the rooms?
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that absolutely insane?
It.
Yeah, it's nuts. You know, and in fact, a lot of people don't realize Atlanta got hit harder by Irma than Tampa, Florida did. So my good buddy, we both know, Todd Jones or whatever, I was actually down with Todd when it made its turn and they thought it was going to go into Tampa, so we scurried back up to Atlanta. And we got hit harder in Atlanta with the wind and all. And people forget, you know, Harvey and Irma were two very different storms. And in Irma, you got more wind damage, which believe it or not, the insurers settle that stuff quicker than they do the flood.
It's easier to identify and take care of.
Yeah, where Houston was a flood event, Houston may be another year before we really get the insurance settlement. So one was a flood event that has a whole different set of problems, as you guys know. You've had all of them, wind, flood, flood and wind, whatever kind of combinations and permutations. You've had them all, right?
We have, and I'm still waiting for the really big inundation of water. We really haven't had the big water event yet. I just think I just jinxed us.
Well, we're just making Florida more liquid. The real estate's more liquid.
Well, we're bringing in what the future's going to look like just that much quicker. Now, Casey, let's talk a little bit about what you're seeing in technology, the impact technology could have on real estate. We were talking right before we went on the air about your commute. You live in Atlanta. You go back and forth between Alabama and Atlanta. You do it late at night. And you were telling me about one of the freakiest things I've ever heard of in my life. Can you kind of tell our listening audience a little bit about that?
You mean there's things that happen that are a little freaky between Alabama and Georgia late at night on the interstate? I can't believe that.
Yeah, not only that, it ain't happening in Florida yet, or maybe it is and I just don't know about it.
Yeah, so it's really fascinating. So I love what's happening in the technology and what's going on, because when our economy is in disruption, that's when we grow. That's when there's change, when things, you know, actually happen.
Well, they're forced to.
Yeah.
They're forced to.
They have to. So change and disruption is good, not always bad. But what I observed was, you know, we're all kind of aware that there's going to be driverless cars, and, you know, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania is going to be probably the first driverless car-enabled city within a year. Well, a lot of people are saying, well, we'll come to trucks and container
trains,
ships and trains and everything else. So I'm driving back, and, you know, I've studied some of the stuff from some of the retailers. There's one big retailer that may not want to be identified, but, you know, they're already using and testing driverless trucks. So I'm driving across I-20 coming back to Atlanta late at night, and here's a convoy of five trucks that look like Kit the Car from the, you know, TV series with the robotic car.
Sure.
And so there's lights and computers going on inside the cabs of the truck, but there's no truck driver. Couldn't
not
five
a, not like a mid, not so, a small person in the front there?
No, so I'm slowing down, accelerating, checking each truck out, but there's a car, kind of like a wide load, you know, chaperoning the front and back. Mm-hmm. And so I'm studying this. I get my phone. I said, man, I got to video this, right? So I'm videotaping it. Within about 2 minutes, an Alabama state trooper is on me and pulls me over. And what I was doing was I was filming a driverless truck convoy that now regularly move across each evening the horizontal interstate system in our country. We are already deploying and using, and many big retailers already have driverless trucks that they're using, and they're chaperoned. And so we had some fun. And once I explained I was just a bleep economist academic that thought this was a cool thing, they decided I wasn't a terrorist or trying to be like Fast and Furious and hijack the convoy.
Yeah, but it still brings up another point, and that's, people do those jobs. What are people going to start doing? You know, those are middle class jobs. Where are the middle class people going to work?
So you raise a really important point. So if you look at the macro indicators, the labor participation rate, right? We cannot get it above 63% with any meaningfulness. You look at the unemployment rate. Well, you know, the government makes up the first number, the U3 number, and says we're at 4.1 or whatever. But the real one, the U6, is, you know, still above 7, the 7 to 8 range. And we have this, you know, we still have labor capacity. Why aren't we seeing the labor pressures, the income pressures? What's going on? And my theory of what's going on in the economy is every aspect of our economy is trying to eradicate one thing, labor. Benefits, reliability, all the things. Whether you look at it, when's the last time you dealt with a parking attendant at a parking garage? Right.
I just noticed that the other day, that the lady that I used to say, puedo tener un recibo por favor, is no longer there.
Yeah. Look at the grocery store. How often do you check out your own groceries?
Well,
and there's one line that's open.
Last time I was at the grocery store, I had to admit, I stood at the checkout counter for 30 seconds till the lady said, sir, you still have to sign. And I go, well, ma'am, I don't go to Publix that often. They all laughed.
Yeah. But I mean, you look at the fast food industry. They're pivoting to automated kiosks.
I couldn't believe it. I went into McDonald's and you can order without getting in line.
Yeah. Look at the hotels, automated app check-ins, whether you're at Marriott or Hyatt.
See a person.
I just was in Boston and recently in Chicago, and everything I did was at the automated kiosk. I did it in the Uber ride, had the key printing. They only had one person at the whole registration desk instead of the normal 4, 5, 6 waiting for the rush hour. So we're about eradicating the labor component because, one, The healthcare costs are prohibitive and nobody can afford that. And number two, just the overall component of labor. It's typically the largest component that companies incur. And if we can't get the tax cuts done or we can't get reform and all these other issues, business is pretty innovative. They'll say, we'll find another solution. We'll finally use technology to solve these problems. And so the question is, what do we do? And so some services and some labor skills, probably it's a good thing we have a technology solution. So truck driving, take for example. The average age of a truck driver is between 56 and 58. Their lifespan 63. They're all dead in 5 to 7 years. We need a technology solution. We need driverless trucks,
sure,
right?
You're going to love that one.
We put all of the burdens on truck drivers, the new hours of work service rule. They all have to comply with electronic driverless logs by December 19th, the week before Christmas, when all the elves have to leave the North Pole of Amazon.
That ought to be real efficient.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. So some industries, we truly do need the technological solutions. But where do we replace the middle class? What is the college student? What is the high school student that enter into the labor force to make money, to pay for tuition, and to start their first career out? What do they do?
Well, I'll bet you have an answer, and that's why we're going to take a break right now. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and have a long segment again. And Casey's going to give us what his take is on where the middle class is going to have their jobs, where they're going to come from, and how they're going to do that. So we'll have great information you're going to want to put to use today. Make sure you stay with us. Wanda, rock me, girl.